Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Good morning. This is Palate Exposure Podcast. I'm here with Christopher Hansen, the general manager of Seguin Moreau, a famous cooperage in American Canyon, Napa Valley. And we're here to talk to him about all sorts of intel on barrels, which is a fascinating subject. A lot of us wine drinkers and spirit drinkers see them on tours, but we really know very little about them. I was privileged this morning to have taken a tour of how it all happens, and it's an absolutely fascinating process. Today was a day that spirits barrels were made, and my first question is, what is the difference between making wine barrels versus spirit barrels?
Well, thanks for having me.
And, absolutely.
You know, it depends on the type of spirit too, because our company's been making, originated making spirit barrels, but for cognac in France. So if you look at a spirit barrel for cognac, it's typically French oak. It's typically a larger size barrel, 350 liter size, and it's typically toasted. However, when you look at the American spirits market, say for whiskey, for bourbon, it's a smaller size, 53 gallons, than even a wine barrel is at 60 gallons. And typically for bourbon, you're using American oak. Sometimes the wood is quick seasoned. It's not naturally seasoned like for wine barrels, so you can age the wood very quickly. And typically the barrel is charred. So for wine barrels, the toasting's very slow, very gentle. You're not putting a lot of char on the inside surface of the barrel. But for American whiskey or bourbon, it has to be charred. So you're actually lighting the barrel on fire to create a level of char on the inside and carbon with different levels. You're cracking the inside of the wood, which for wine, they don't want. They want it to be very smooth, a very golden or light golden brown color than a black charred and crackled surface for bourbon or whiskey.
Got it. You mentioned sizes of different barrels. So how many sizes do you produce here, for instance?
So the typical wine barrel is a 59-gallon, 60-gallon barrel, which is 225 liters or 228 liters. So we also do a 53-gallon for spirits, which is 200 liters. We also do 70 gallons, which is 265 liters. We do 300 liters, which is the typical size for Australia. They call a hogshead. And we also do 500 liters. In France, they also will do 350 liters, 400 liters, and they also make some small barrels for us in 30 gallons, roughly 110 liters.
Wow, it sounds like a rather vast variety of different options.
You have a lot of different options. For French oak, you have different grains, so people can select extra fine grain, semi-fine grain, loose grain. So with that, the shape of the barrel, the different toasting levels, it gives the winemakers a lot of options to choose from.
Wow. So is there a distinct advantages to aging in a smaller barrel in terms of the liquid to wood ratio?
Yeah, the smaller the barrel, the faster you're going to get the oak impact on it. So, you know, there's some people like to use a 500 liter barrel, for instance, which is a double size. So you're going to have a much slower extraction of the wood into the wine, and you're going to have a much lighter oak impact than, say, a typical 60 gallon barrel.
And it sounds like this facility is equipped to do a lot of customization. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, I mean, in the wine business, customization is the key, because you have a lot of typical barrels that people make, but you know, the service to the customer is to go out on site, to have a discussion with them about what are their goals for the barrels from us, what kind of toasting profile they're looking for, what kind of impact they like to see, to help them from us select. They probably know what size barrel they like, but what is, if they're using French oak, which grain is appropriate, which toast level they should try. Sometimes when they do a trial, they'll try several different toast levels to see which works and fits the style they're going for. And sometimes, you know, we have our standard toast levels, which are fairly vast. It gives them a lot of options. We typically don't do a lot of custom toast levels that way. But really the customization is giving them the services they need it to match the right barrel to their wine. And some winemakers, they know what they want. They don't want a whole lot of advice from us, but some people do. So you have to know how much help each one needs, because some, they know what they want and they order the same thing every year, but some people want more advice than others.
How does the trial process actually work? Do the winemaker purchase several types of barrels from you and just fill them?
Yeah, so it's fairly typical at the wineries. They do different experiments and trials each year where they'll pick a few new things and they'll put in a specific lot of wine where they can compare it against each other. Mm-hmm. And maybe at a certain point of the aging, they'll taste it. Maybe they'll leave it in those same barrels for the whole aging, maybe only for a certain part of it, and it allows them to evaluate if that's a right fit for their program.
Do you have really small wineries and really large ones that you work with?
Or? Yeah, I mean, we work with some wineries that only buy one or two barrels, and we have a few that order several hundred to over 1,000 barrels. So we have a big variety of the size of the customers, but for the average order, it's probably less than 20 barrels on average.
Okay.
But you know, we do deal with some wineries that are quite large production, but we also are dealing with really small family wineries or people getting started.
Can you think of an example of really highly customized barrel that was a bit of an outlier?
You know, there's a couple customers we do some custom toast levels for them that we try to keep it, you know, we don't talk too much to other customers about what we're doing for them, but we'll play, like if you say we have a medium long or medium toast, but they want it a little longer, a little shorter, customized for them, we can do that. And maybe we have a special marking for them for that. So that kind of customization is easy to do. And there's only a few people that do that. But most, the thing to understand is in the cooperage business, everybody, you know, let's say there's 40 coopers making wine barrels around the world, and everybody has a medium toast, a medium plus. But how they do it, there's no standardization. There's no governance that says, okay, a medium toast is supposed to be this time, this temperature, this color. So each cooper has their own interpretation of what they call, say, medium toast. So you could buy barrels from 10 coopers, all medium toast, and they're all going to be slightly different. So when you blend that together, you're going to get that complexity of having a different cooperages with different styles of toasting. So that's why they do these trials sometimes, because they could buy five medium toast barrels from five coopers. They try them, and some they might like and some they might not.
That's the art piece of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's part of this business that there's not a standardization. The same thing goes for a French oak and how the coopers define the grain, because you have every cooper says, oh, we have tight grain, extra tight grain. But how you define that, there might be subtle differences where one cooperage for extra fine grain, there might be 1 millimeter grain width, but the other next cooper might be a millimeter and a half, which is a difference. So that's where you see some differences between the suppliers, because there's not a set rule of what everything should be.
Got it. And you mentioned it's easy to customize it. To me, that's a bit of a telling statement, because the skill level of people that actually produce the barrel has to be this high to be able to tweak it to a minute degree. Is that true?
Yeah, and a lot of the customization is going to be in the toasting. And, you know, we started the cooperage here. We built the building here and the operation in 1994. Mm-hmm. And the same guy we hired in 1994 is still doing the toasting today, 25 years later.
Remarkable.
So he's still here. So you have that consistency of the same. Obviously, we have more than, we just have two people doing the toasting here, mm-hmm. but the main guy has been here since 1994.
Yeah, I actually watched him work, and it was utterly fascinating and just awe-inspiring. He just casually walks, and his motions are so deliberate.
Yeah, and we, our two master coopers here that are running the workshop, they've worked for us for longer than 25 years.
Wow.
They were already employees for us when we built the cooperage. We had a small little workshop in downtown Napa where we just did repairs and maintenance for people's barrels they are importing from France. And they're still with us today after they saw us build the cooperage and are still with us today. And they were recruited from Scotland. And there are two Scotsmen who work for us, Douglas Rennie and Andy Byers. And a lot of the winemakers know them very well, as they've worked for us for a very long time.
You're really part of the community, and what you're describing, this kind of stamina, the continuity and consistency, has to bring a lot of value to the table.
It does.
So let's talk about wood. How many types of wood do you work with?
So the main two are French oak and American oak.
Got it.
There's other European oaks we use. We mm-hmm. source some wood from, it's along the Black Sea. That's either called Russian oak or Caucasian oak. Mm-hmm. And then we buy some oak from other European oak countries that we blend together, like Hungary, Romania, those regions.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little bit of acacia that we use in certain barrels. And those are the main ones.
Do those species of wood that you mentioned from other worlds besides France and the U.S., are they conducive to wine barrels mainly, or mainly for spirit?
Mostly for wine. So, you know, those regions, you know, it's the same species as French oak.
Okay.
But obviously the trees are growing in a different country.
Oh, okay,
they have
a
different forestry management process.
Okay.
And if you go back, you know, hundreds of years, you know, when French oak was prized for building ships in France,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the wood they used for barrels came from other countries.
Really? Oh, fascinating. I heard that white oak is a very prized variety
That's
in France.
Whether it's American oak or French oak, it's white oak.
It is always
that's
white
the
oak.
White oak. That's the wood that's best for barrels because it has the natural structure to keep liquid inside. People have, you know, if you remember back in here in Napa, people were using redwood for tanks because redwood was readily available here in California. But white oak is the best oak for making barrels because, one, it keeps liquid in, and also the flavor it imparts to the wine is very desirable.
French oak, of course, is so heavily prized and conversely the most expensive. Can you tell us more about why that is? I mean, you mentioned forestry management, and of course there's the age of the trees.
You know, French and American oak are two different species.
Two different species, okay.
American oak is a denser wood, it's heavier, it has a different chemical properties to it.
Okay.
So American oak, we say, you know, a general way to put it, it's a more aromatic and a more aggressive oak flavor. So American oak is naturally higher in whiskey lactone chemical. So if you know American whiskey, you have that coconut aroma. So that's coming from the whiskey lactone, which for some wineries, they don't like that aromatic, you know, characteristic. So that's naturally found in American oak. And a lot of times with the longer seasoning the wood for 2 or 3 years, it helps to reduce that, you know, heavy lactone characteristic. French oak is naturally lower in that whiskey lactone. It has still has a lactone oak sweetness to it, but it's not as aggressive as American oak.
So the actual composition of the wood is materially different.
Chemical composition
different.
Is different. Mm-hmm. French oak is naturally higher in oak tannin, but sometimes we have a higher perception of the tannin in American oak.
And tannin as a property, you know, particularly in the French iteration of it, is really highly prized, isn't it, by the winemaking community?
It gives a nice structure to the wine. You know, the more you toast the barrel, you're kind of reducing some of that oak tannin that's obvious coming out. Mm-hmm. There are different ways you can manipulate it, but it's giving the structure to help the wine.
And the other countries that produce oak as well, you mentioned Hungary, you know, Black Sea, Russia. What are they like?
I've never been to see it myself, so yeah. I can't really say too much about it. But what I've been told is that, you know, in France, they've been managing the forest to be sustainable since the time of Napoleon.
Wow.
So they're growing 180 to 200-year-old trees. It's a business for the French government. They're growing the trees as a crop that they can sell to cooperages and other people who need this wood. I don't think it's really the same in those other countries. It's not the same in the U.S. In the U.S., most of the wood comes from privately owned lands that people choose to cut trees from their property.
Okay.
We're not selling trees from national forests or national parks or any of those locations. So in France, it's the government has the trees. They sell the trees at auction. In the U.S., the trees are sold by private individuals to loggers or stave mills that then cut the wood into staves and sell them.
Interesting. So how does the process work for you from soup to nuts? In other words, you have to acquire French wood at auction. That's the only pathway, right?
You can either buy it at auction or you can buy it from the loggers who buy it at auction. So there's two ways you can do it. Some of the coopers buy at the auction. Some will buy from loggers or suppliers that go to the auction and buy for you. We do a little bit of both. And in France, we own three of our own stave cutting mills.
Wow.
So we buy a certain amount of logs that we cut the staves ourselves. And the remaining amount we buy from smaller family-owned stave mills that will sell us, cut wood already cut into staves. Mm-hmm. So that's how we get the supply. It all comes to our own seasoning yard located in Cognac. And then we'll mature the wood there naturally for a minimum of 2 years. In the U.S., we don't own our own stave cutting mills. So what we do is we purchase all of the staves from family, stave mills. Some of them we've been buying from for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And all over the Midwest, from Minnesota to Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, Indiana, even one in North Carolina, all over the place. Mm-hmm. And we ship all the wood to our own seasoning yard it's about an hour and a half south of St. Louis in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And then we mature all the wood there on our own seasoning yard. We either if it, in France or U.S., we have a special seasoning method where we'll spray the wood with water during the first 6 to 8 weeks. So the wood stays wet and helps to wash out more of the, harsher wood tannin, harsher flavors and aromas, and we feel gives us a better seasoning method than just leaving it outside on its own, which many people do.
How does it work with other countries that you work with? How do you procure that wood?
We buy the wood from stave mills and then we'll ship it to our location in Cognac and mature it on our site.
Got it. And what drives purchasing of this other versions of wood? Why do you work
with that? It's not our core business. Our core business is really French oak, especially for Europe. In the U.S., we sell a large amount of French and American oak. But there's a small demand for these other Russian or European oaks. Honestly, in the U.S., it's not our core business. We only sell, you know, several hundred of these per year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I think in Europe, they do a larger business for that.
Oh, okay.
But there's a demand for it. There's other coopers that are based in, that really specialize, say, in Hungarian oak.
Yeah.
So they have that business. But our core business and what we're known for, first is French oak, and second for American oak.
Do you foresee those other countries taking a larger market share in the future? Or do you think it's going to be status quo pretty
much? I don't see anything changing anytime soon. There's still just such a high demand for French oak. The prices at auction have been increasing the last few years, big amounts, because people need the wood. The wine business has been growing the last, say, 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the demand is growing, which drives the prices up at the auction.
Got it. Because
there's not a set price for it. And based upon the quality of the trees in a certain lot, if certain coopers need the wood, they have to be willing to pay for it.
Is there a particular kind of a pinnacle, like you mentioned, particular trees, particular lot in a specific forest? Is there like the 100-point patch of trees that everybody buys for?
Well, there's just such a strong demand for, you know, tight grain and extra tight grain wood. In the U.S., that's what a lot of the wineries are requesting, is tight grain, really tight grain. So that's really the demand.
Why tight grain? Why is it so?
So the tighter the grain, the slower the extraction is going to be.
Okay.
And the smoother the flavors.
Okay.
With a tighter grain, you have a little more oak aroma, but you have less obvious oak flavor.
Okay.
And the wider the grain, you're getting more oak flavor, extracting faster, and a little less oak aroma. And like for wide grain, which is, you know, if you thinking of a forest source, it's like a Limousin wood, that's more used for brandy in France, such as cognac.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because it can take
faster extraction,
impact,
getting more oak tannin,
really interesting.
Into and more color extraction.
You highlighted the aging process. You said that you age your wood for 2 years in the elements, essentially outdoors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so important?
Well, I mean, you can dry wood just putting it in what's called a kiln, and it circulates warm air around and it sucks the moisture out of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
So when the wood is cut, it has a high moisture content. So you can't bend it, it can't be made into a barrel. So you have to get the moisture down to, say, 14% humidity to use for a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're using like a kiln to dry it, you're locking all the harsh flavors, aromas, tannins, it's still there in the wood. You're just sucking the moisture out.
Mm-hmm.
If you leave it outside exposed to the rain, the snow, the elements, you're washing out more of those harsher flavors, so you're getting a smoother product once you make it into a barrel.
And it's a more natural paced process.
Yeah.
So,
and there's many distilleries here in the U.S. that want longer seasoned wood for their spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, 12-month age, 18 months, 24 months, there's more distillers that are looking for longer aging of their wood rather than what is traditional for bourbon barrels, which is you buy the wood, you kiln dry it, you make the barrel.
Economically speaking, that's the fastest pathway to revenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is really a very elongated process.
Exactly.
And that's not as...
For the higher quality.
Absolutely. But when people buy artisanal products, isn't that sort of the expectation that even though they don't consciously realize that's where it starts, well, it starts with respect to the vine in the vineyard, and then how the fruit is actually being handled, that's the vessel that cradles it in the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And the integrity of this vessel is crucial, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's different coopers that sell barrels at different prices, from lower price to higher price. We're one of the higher priced suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
We have a well-trained crew to make sure we're adhering to high quality standards. And the wine's going into these vessels, and Different coopers have different flavor profiles that they're known for, and the winemakers do their tasting and research, and they have certain ones they prefer and other ones they don't prefer.
Yeah.
We sell to a lot of wineries in California, Oregon, Washington, all over the U.S. really, Midwest, East Coast, Canada, Mexico. We have a large number of customers, but obviously we don't sell to everybody. Nobody can.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.